You are listening to a StashMyComics.com First, an audio interview with comics creator Troy Hickman. Troy Hickman is a double Eisner Award nominee, nominated for Common Grounds in 2005. His latest publication is Twilight Guardian, a pilot season 2008 winner, and now a four-issue miniseries at Top Cow. Troy Hickman's human interest stories and superhero slice-of-life genre is unlike anything in the comics market. We talk about Common Grounds and how Troy Hickman made the leap from self-publishing mini-comics to being published by Top Cow. The interview is divided into two parts, first of which focuses mostly on the Common Grounds anthology. The conversation does steer us into very interesting territory, such as how to get published, Troy Hickman's influences, and what drives him to explore the themes that he does. When part two is released, keep an eye on the StashMyComics.com homepage for details on a Troy Hickman giveaway. Now to the interview. Hello, Troy Hickman.
Hi, Jason. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. So, you are actually a double Eisner Award nominee, is that right?
I am, yes, I am twice cursed. Common Grounds was up for Best Short Story and Best Anthology in, I guess it would have been 2005.
And Common Grounds actually made the, had an interesting trajectory, which it came from some mini-comics you published on your own, and then was it discovered, or did you pitch it to Top Cow for it to eventually go to official print, or?
Well, what happened? Yeah, I started doing it in, I think it would have been 1994, as a mini-comic called Holy Crawlers, and I had seven issues, and it went up until 1999 or maybe 2000, and I would always take my stacks of mini-comics to the Chicago convention every year and sit there at my table and have people come by and kind of give me that evil glare as they looked at my little photocopied mini-comics, and what happened was one year, Jim McLaughlin, who was in charge of Wizard at the time, happened to come by the table, and he noticed the title of the comic, Holy Crawlers, and kind of got him interested. I was in the bathroom, I think, at the time. Somebody else was manning my table. So he took them back to the Wizard offices with him, and they passed them around, and everyone seemed to really like it. So they ended up doing like a fairly sizable article about the comic and Wizard. And then a few years later, Jim took over at Top Cow, and one of the first things he did was to get a hold of me and ask if he could take the Holy Crawler scripts and have them redrawn by a bunch of famous comic book people and publish it as... Well, we eventually decided on the name Common Grounds for it.
So that's a good lesson for aspiring comics creators out there to just basically get stuff published to begin with.
Yeah, even if it's just photocopying things and, you know, folding and stapling them yourself, it really makes a difference, I think, in getting your name out there. It gives you exposure. It gives you practice. You can get feedback on this stuff. And I think it's a good idea, too, to be able to, if you are going to pitch things, you know, you can walk up to an editor at a convention or email or mail him, it'd be snail mail, I guess. But, you know, you've got an actual book there that they can take a look at, as opposed to, say, handing them a script. It's kind of tough to get much out of just looking at a script. But if you can give it to them in some sort of comic form, you know, already done as kind of a comic book, then it's a lot easier for them to kind of judge what you do. So, yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think more people should try doing that, some sort of self-publishing. And, of course, these days with webcomics, it's probably easier than ever. So,
do you want to, for the folks listening who may or may not have read Common Grounds, do you want to give us maybe an overview of what it's about, maybe the premise of what Common Grounds is?
Yeah, I can probably do that in 50 words or less. Common Grounds is about a chain of donut shops / coffee shops, and the clientele is largely superheroes and supervillains. It's a neutral place, so when they come in, there can't be any fighting. And so the comic itself ends up being, well, for lack of a better way of putting it, it's a lot of people in capes and tights sitting around talking to each other. And, you know, functionally, that should probably make for a boring comic, but what I try to do is find interesting things to bring out in the dialogue, because it's almost, you know, 100% dialogue. There's almost no action in it whatsoever, and so it's, yeah, it's a lot of super people talking, and you know, I don't know, it's theoretically, as I said, it's probably a recipe for failure, but it seemed to do okay, so.
Well, I read the book, the anthology, and I loved it. And I've noticed from reading a lot of your work, your mini comics, Common Grounds and Twilight Guardian, which we'll go into in a minute, that human interest, the ground level themes reoccur a lot in your work. Is there a particular reason why it's that theme and not others that you tend to like to explore?
Well, I think it's because it's what I'm most interested in. I tend to be really drawn toward characterization and towards dialogue, and you know, I've said this many times before. I am very definitely not a plot-oriented kind of guy. I have a hard time following a lot of plots when I'm reading comics or watching movies. I get lost easily. I'm not the sort of person who can read like a Tom Clancy novel and get all the nuances and try to, you know, follow the espionage and everything. I'm not good at that. And so I think probably because of that, I'm not sure really what the cause and effect, which is which there, but I tend to be drawn more toward dialogue and characterization. And so, yeah, whatever I'm writing, I mean, I also write, you know, text short stories, and they, you know, it all tends to be very much character-driven and heavy in dialogue. And, yeah, pretty much everything I've done it goes that way. And, you know, even when I was growing up and I was reading comics, that's really the stuff that appealed to me. I mean, you know, as a kid, certainly just the nature of superheroes and the action and everything, that was great. But what I really found myself enjoying was the interaction between the characters. And I think for that reason, I've always been drawn more to like super team books than I have in individual characters, just because there's going to be, you know, more of that give and take between the characters.
I've noticed a lot of your stories are about overcoming one's fears and overcoming peer pressure and that sort of thing. And I know that you've been a college professor. I'm wondering, is there a connection between what people experience, like for instance, bullying, and that sort of peer pressure that people experience in school that inspires your work?
Well, that's interesting. There are certainly elements of that, and you know, in my own experience, I mean, I certainly dealt with that kind of thing probably every day of public school that I was going through it to the extreme. I think I probably tend to write a lot of stories about people who have triumphed over something. Because it's something, I guess, that probably is reflected in my own life. I mean, theoretically, I probably should not be here doing what I do today. You know, I mean, I grew up in, for lack of a better term, what would be considered a crime family. I mean, a lot of people who ended up on the FBI most wanted list and the like. My parents, while they made sure that I got an education, you know, both my mom and my dad dropped out of school in the eighth grade because, you know, they were growing up at a time when they had to support their families. And, you know, throughout my own life, I've gone through the sort of things. I've gone through some really pretty awful tragedies. But, you know, what I found, and I've mentioned this before, it would have been in 2002. I quite literally was in the worst position I've ever been in my life. I mean, everything was just terrible. The kind of thing that, you know, would probably drive a lot of people to just say, you know, why should I keep going on? And literally within 6 months' time, it became the best time of my life. Everything had turned around. And so I'm really drawn to that sort of thing, this sort of sense that not only can we be redeemed, but, you know, that we can really triumph over this. You know, I can't help myself. Every time that the movie Rudy is on TV, I watch it. And, of course, you know, my girlfriend makes fun of me for this because, you know, she'll say, how can you watch this? It's so corny. But there's a real truth to it. And you know, and maybe if you look at a lot of these events in life, maybe they are corny. I don't know. But I can't really get it across to her why this means so much to me. Of course, she's Canadian, too, Jason, and you understand how that works.
Well, us Canucks have a lot in common, even though the country's wide. Just to stay with common grounds, I was doing a little bit of research, and apparently it's been picked up for a TV show.
Yeah, I don't know too much about it yet. They announced at last year's San Diego convention, I think it was, that it had been picked up by Starz Media for a TV show. Don't really know too much about it beyond that. This stuff tends to take forever. I know probably I want to say around 2005 or so, just not too long after Common Grounds came out as individual issues, we were talking about TV stuff, and I had to kind of write up a TV treatment for it and the like, and then I didn't hear anything for probably about 5 years, and yeah, last year they were talking about it again. They seemed to be a little bit more sure of it this time, that maybe there had actually been paper signed and the like. The last I heard, there was, and this could be totally apocryphal now, I don't know, but the last I heard, there was talk of maybe Seth Green producing. I know he's mentioned Common Grounds before in interviews and the like, so, you know, it's possible that might happen. That would be cool. And there has been some interest now in maybe turning Twilight Guardian into maybe a theatrical movie. We'll have to see how that goes. You know, I'm not getting my hopes up. I mean, it's going to be great if it happens, but, you know, when you've done this for a while, you realize that almost everything, it seems like, ends up getting optioned in one way or another, and, you know, maybe 1 out of 1,000 of them actually makes it to the screen. So, you know, I'll remain hopeful about it, but, you know, I'll believe it when I'm actually sitting in a theater watching it. So,
well, here's hoping it works out, because there's a lot of potential in those stories. Now, you mentioned Twilight Guardian. We might as well go into that. Do you want to tell us how Twilight Guardian also went from the mini comic to the pilot season, and finally to the mini series, the first issue of which came out last week?
I started in the early 90s. I did a mini comic called Tales of the Pathetic Club, and it was about folks with obsessive compulsive disorders, and one of the characters was this woman who basically every night she put on a domino mask and a hoodie, and she walked around like a 9-area block around her neighborhood and kind of patrolled it to fight crime. And of course, you know, it's a little suburban neighborhood. It's basically the neighborhood that I'm living in, and, you know, there's not really anything that happens. So again, it was one of those things, much like Common Grounds, where I like to challenge myself. I like to, when I start on a project, I like to kind of have, you know, some goal in mind, and I want to make it as kind of difficult as I can for myself. So, you know, when I did Common Grounds, it was a matter of, okay, here I have a superhero comic. There's going to be tons of superheroes in it and no action. How do I make this interesting? And, you know, so I ended up like doing a one story, goes 13 pages. It all takes place in two adjoining bathroom stalls, and you have a hero and a villain talking to each other. See, for me, that, you know, it's a challenge. I want to see if I can make that work. So with Twilight Guardian, it became a matter of, here's this woman, she's patrolling the streets. Can I make both the neighborhood that she's in and her internal monologue interesting enough that it's going to, you know, hold the reader's interest? So anyway, so she appeared in just a few pages of Tales of the Pathetic Club, and then folks seemed to respond to her. I liked her. So I was going to do a 3-issue series with her. I only ended up doing one issue. I don't remember why exactly. And that would have been, I think she first appeared in 1993, and I think maybe her one-shot mini-comic was 94 or 95. And what happened then is basically nothing. She sat on the shelf until 2003, and when Jim McLaughlin got a hold of me about doing Common Grounds, he also said, well, we've got some interest in Twilight Guardian, too. So, you know, could we get the rights to do something with her? And so, you know, I was cool with that. And then again, she ended up sitting on the shelf for about another 5 years. And then Top Cow was doing their 2008 pilot season competition. And so they contacted me and said, you know, we'd like to put Twilight Guardian in the mix here. So I kind of took her previous mini comics appearances, kind of merged them together. I added some new pages, and you know, and it became the pilot season issue, which ended up winning. And so the prize for winning pilot season is you get a 4-issue mini series. So that's what we've got now. And the first issue just came out. I think the second issue is due out in about 2 weeks or so.
Now, the first issue got really good reviews. I read it a couple times. I really, really liked it. It follows the same theme of the one-shot. Recaps a little bit, but builds on it. Same idea of the Twilight Guardian who reads a comic book every night before going on patrol, and we actually get to read the comic book that she reads, and she is a fan of Golden and Silver Age books, so you get the opportunity of creating a lot of wacky and puntastic superheroes.
Yeah, those pages, you know, they serve a lot of purposes, really. And yeah, folks seem to like them, and that's great. They're there... for one thing, and you've mentioned this before, and you're right on the mark about this, they serve as, you know, I can kind of use them as subtext, and I can sort of mirror what's going on internally with Twilight Guardian in the stories that she's reading. They also kind of break up the book a little bit, because since it is basically just internal monologue and her sort of patrolling the streets, it gives me an opportunity to kind of sort of throw a bone to those people who do want some action in their comics, even if it's just the occasional page. And then, yeah, what it also allows me to do is what I've always wanted to do in comics, which is to write Silver Age comics primarily, which, of course, given the time I was born, I can't really do that at this point. And, of course, some of the characters that I grew up with and loved, they've kind of, you know, bastardized to such a level now that I probably wouldn't recognize them anyway. But this kind of gives me an opportunity to do this, you know, to do that sort of thing, even if it's only a page at a time. What I would like to do at some point, if I could maybe talk Top Cow or somebody into letting me do it, is to do sort of a comic that's a little bit like Alan Moore's 1963 series, so that I could, you know, maybe focus each individual issue on a different character or team or whatever, and, you know, give background on them, kind of do, you know, sort of a representative issue of what that comic would have been like. I don't know. We'll have to see if that comes to pass. But yeah, it's really fun putting those pages in. I have a lot of fun doing that.
Well, they're a lot of fun to read. And like you said, they reveal a lot about the character. They're also very entertaining, especially because they're very humorous. For instance, in this issue, there's a character who is actually a chimpanzee with a freeze gun, whose name is Bananas Froster. And and he fights an ant villain who's also some sort of Chinese monk, and he summons Monk Ease to fight Bananas Froster. So just for an idea of how those pages might play out for the folks who are listening might be interested in reading. A little bit more about Twilight Guardian. She is a real-life superhero, or at least based on the real-life superhero, I suppose, movement, you could call it. And I did a little bit of research into that. It's been in the news here and there. People who do actually dress up in superhero costumes and do community work, mostly community outreach, but also citizens' arrests and that sort of thing. And your take on it seems quite well researched. Can you tell us a little bit more about the process of learning about that and then translating it to a story about a person who does that?
Yeah, it's one of these things. It's interesting with the stuff that I have done, in that, you know, I did Holy Crawlers, which became Common Grounds. I started doing that in about 94 or so. And at the time that I was doing that, there really were not a lot of comics that were doing that sort of thing, where they were really focusing as much on dialogue and on characterization and just that sort of thing. And so, you know, I published those, and it wasn't until 2003 that Top Cow, you know, decided to start doing it as Common Grounds. And in that interim time between the early 90s and, you know, 2003, 2004, there had been some books that had kind of sprung up that were that sort of thing, right? So I had people saying, well, gee, you know, Common Grounds is a lot like this or this or this. And, you know, it became one of these things where I didn't want to, you know, have to keep saying to folks, well, you know, actually, I did these stories back in the early 90s, blah, blah, blah. And Twilight Guardian is kind of the same thing, because she first appeared in 1993. And at that time, there really was not too much of a real-life superhero community. There probably were occasional folks, but it was certainly something that people were not aware of at the time. If a person in a superhero costume appeared in public, it was almost always some kind of a jokey sort of thing. It wasn't someone who actually kind of, you know, fancied themselves a superhero. So, you know, I created Twilight Guardian in 93. With that sort of notion that I'm creating a realistic superhero. And then when she finally gets published in an actual, you know, widely distributed comic in 2008, the real life superhero thing had really kind of blown up. And certainly now in 2011, it's become even bigger. So I didn't, at the time I created her, I didn't really have anything to go by. What's happened, though, in just the last couple of years and in preparing for this particular series is that I have, you know, talked to a lot of the real-life superhero people. The first one that contacted me is a guy called the Crimson Fist, and I've gotten to know him pretty well over the last couple of years. And I've talked to a number of other folks too who do that, and what's ended up, and I should mention too, they were really helpful and supportive in getting the pilot season issue of Twilight Guardian, you know, to the win. They really got the word out about it, and I appreciate that. But I've talked to a lot of them in the last couple of years, and that's ended up with, In the Twilight Guardian miniseries that I'm doing now, in the second issue, she is going to meet with a group of these people. It's going to be sort of a real life superhero version of the Justice League or the Avengers, that kind of thing. So, I've gotten to know a lot of these folks, and they do it for all sorts of different reasons. Most of them really, you know, they've got really good hearts, and they're doing it for absolutely the right reasons. And I know there's sometimes there's some criticism of them. I certainly read this on comic message boards where you'll see people saying, well, you know, they shouldn't do this. They should leave it to the police, blah, blah, blah. And of course, I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, if you saw someone, you know, stealing something or attacking someone or something in public, you know, the police are probably not going to be there for a while. So you would probably, you know, jump out and try to do something about it. The only difference is that these folks are wearing costumes at the time, and they're more often than not are probably better prepared for it than we would be. But so, yeah, I've at this point I've had nothing but positive experiences with these folks. But yeah, it is changing the way that I'm going about Twilight Guardian, because it's just by necessity. People are, when they read the book, you know, I know that they're going to say, oh, well, this is like a real life superhero kind of thing, because it has been in the news so much lately.
Since your writing and your themes are so distinct from a lot of stuff in comic books these days, I'd like to talk a little bit about your influences, whether it be in or outside of comic books. Like, are there some novelists or comic creators that you feel have had a particular impact on or have informed your writing?
Yeah, there are probably tons of people. Outside of comics, I know one of my biggest influences was Flannery O'Connor. I don't know if how many folks listening are necessarily familiar with her work. She was a Southern female writer, Catholic. A lot of what generally is considered kind of apocalyptic fiction, I think is the phrase they use. And people generally are surprised when they hear that she's someone who had a great influence on me, because, you know, my stuff is very, as I've said, character-driven. And I don't think people generally think of her work being that way. But there's something in her stories. There's a certain, there's a humanity. There's also the fact that there are a lot of really interesting kind of quirky things that happen in her stories, and that's always something that I focus on, kind of the quirky detail. I'm really drawn to that sort of thing. Within comics, lots of folks, a lot of the writers of the 1970s, the better writers, Steve Englehart, Steve Gerber had a great influence on me. Gerber did, there's a story in Giant Size Man Thing, number 4, The Kid's Night Out, which was a pretty major story at the time. I think it probably won some Shazam awards or whatever the major awards would have been at the time. But it's an absolute great story, and it's the kind of thing that it was just so sort of character driven, and Gerber's Man-Thing stories are beautiful for that reason, because Man-Thing basically just serves as a catalyst in the story, and it's really about the just normal people around him and what's going on, and that's really, that appeals to me, and that's kind of in a way what I'm trying to do with the stuff that I write. One of the most major influences as far as shaping what it is I'm doing as a professional writer would be Harvey Pekar. And when I first read American Splendor, probably in the late 70s or early 80s, it absolutely just changed the way that I looked at comic books. Up until then, I had been pretty much a standard superhero comic reader. I'd like to think that I had, you know, some sense of what was good and bad, but most of it was just in that realm, superhero comics, the occasional, you know, monster science fiction comic, that kind of thing. And I'd never seen anything like American Splendor when I first read it, just this very autobiographical, very down-to-earth sort of writing. And it really opened my eyes about a lot of things. And so I think a lot of what I've tried to do with comics, I still have that superhero mentality. It's still, you know, one of my greatest interests. But I've tried to bring as much of American Splendor and that sort of mindset to it as I can. And it's, you know, it's one of the things that always drives me crazy in comics. I've written about this quite a bit, and I'll probably write some more about it. But there's a real kind of a division in comics between those people who like superhero comics and those people who like you know, more eclectic, artsy, whatever you want to call it, comics. And I've never understood that, because I've always, from, you know, at least my teenage years, I've appreciated all of that stuff. I mean, a good comic is a good comic. And it's always driven me a bit crazy that there are people who, you know, fall into one camp or another. Just like those people who are, you know, say Marvel zombies as opposed to DC fans or whatever. It just always seemed crazy to me. And so I guess a lot of my comics are an attempt to kind of merge those two things. I'm not sure that they have to be mutually exclusive.
You mentioned Harvey Pekar. When I agree with you, by the way. I think there's it's like Pepsi. It shouldn't be like Pepsi and Coke. You know, maybe you can like both. You mentioned Harvey Pekar. While reading your stuff, I also noticed a little bit of the same feelings I get when I read Chester Brown or Seth, two Canadian comics creators. Have you ever read any of their stuff?
Yeah, I have. I don't know if there's as much influence there, but I certainly have read their stuff, and yeah, I appreciate it. I'm trying to think of other folks along those lines who would, you know, who may have kind of had an influence on me. There's a ton of people. Probably about the same time that I started reading Harvey Pekar, I was reading some stuff that Howard Cruz was doing, and it was, you know, it was very true to life. There are probably all sorts of folks in there, but you know, I try to keep up on things. I'm not able to read that many comics these days simply because of the cost of it. But I try to keep up on what's going on, and you know, who's out there, and it's nice to see how much variety there is in comics these days. It's interesting, you know. I started reading comics when I was a very small kid, you know, in the late 60s. Can we edit that out? Do I? That I was a little kid in the late 60s. But in the time that I've been reading comics, it's interesting to see, you know, not just how much variety has, you know, there is in comics now, but how much exposure. Because, you know, even in the late 60s, early 70s, there were people, you know, certainly people doing other sorts of comics. There were undergrounds, there were, you know, various kinds of small press sort of things. But you didn't really, you know, a lot of folks didn't know about their existence. And of course, that's changed a lot in recent years. And you know, just like the movie business has given comics a lot more exposure with the superhero stuff, it's also given exposure to the other stuff, Ghost World, you know, and that kind of thing. I try to keep up on a lot of that sort of thing. I would eventually, if I can find a publisher who will let me do it, I would love to do some sort of an autobiographical series, because it's one of those deals. People tell me that all the time. I'll be talking to them about, you know, the things that have happened in my life, and I hear them say, you know, you got to make that into a comic or a graphic novel or, you know, what have you. And I think I could do a good job on that kind of thing. So hopefully at some point here I can find a publisher that will, you know, maybe take a chance on my doing that.
That ends part one of our interview with Troy Hickman. Come back next week for part two. In part two, we discuss in detail his latest series, Twilight Guardian. The discussion does meander into some more esoteric subject, like what is insanity and the portrayal of women in comic books. If you haven't already, do register an account with StashMyComics.com. It is a free online comics collection cataloging software. You can add to the database by uploading images, adding character appearances, or adding new series. By doing so, you will be awarded points which are redeemable for tickets in giveaways. Keep an eye on the StashMyComics.com homepage for the upcoming Troy Hickman giveaway. Also, check out our forums where you can connect with fellow collectors. Please read the blog for more interviews, reviews, and columns. Until next time, live long and prosper. May the force be with you. Excelsior.